Hello, this is Ron Krejcik with Warriors Off Court, pinch hitting for Connor Letourneau. Today I'll be talking to Bruce Jenkins and Scott Osler, Chronicle columnists, about the crazy free agent offseason in the NBA, how it's reshaped the Western Conference, and where the Warriors fit in. Coming up right after the break. This is Ron Krejcik. We're here with columnist Bruce Jenkins and Scott Osler. Bruce and Scott, thanks for joining us.
You bet.
Oh, yeah.
And today we're just going to kind of wrap up a crazy offseason, a crazy stretch in the NBA that's really kind of reshaped the Western Conference and where the Warriors sit in it. After reigning atop for 5 years now, it's suddenly a whole new landscape. And to start, Bruce and Scott, sort of what do you think about the much younger, retooled Warriors roster, and how does it sort of compare with, you know, the Lakers, the Clippers? A lot of teams in the West got significantly better in the past few weeks.
Bruce here. Well, it's really jarring to realize that you look at the 14-man roster and there's eight new guys. I mean, there's almost no way to judge what the Warriors are, how they're going to play. And we're so used to, like you say, we're so used to just, you know, sitting on the throne and peeling grapes and drinking champagne and celebrating this and that. And all of a sudden, some outlets are rating them sixth or seventh in the conference. I think the Clippers have probably made the boldest statements with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, the way they rigged that. And their defense just looks so good with those two guys, Patrick Beverley, Harkless, and Jermichael Green can play defense. They can get out there and stop you. And the Warriors aren't going to be able to do that unless some of these guys really enhance their defensive reputations, like Willie Cauley-Stein or the kid Poole coming in, the first-round draft pick. We really don't know if they're going to play good defense as a team, which is something that we're used to, minus Clay, minus Durant, who played pretty good defense, and Iguodala.
Right.
And then Livingston is gone, too. It's just such a whole new world. I kind of agree with the forecasts saying that they're certainly not at the top and really more toward the bottom of the eight that I think they will make the playoffs.
Yeah, the West is remarkably stacked. Scott, what's your thought on the Clippers and Lakers in particular? I mean, as Jenks said, the Clippers have added these superstars, and they also have kind of given Doc Rivers a team he deserves. I mean, here's a very good established coach, and from what it sounds like, that was part of the appeal to Paul George and Kawhi Leonard was to play for Doc. How do you sort of see them and the Lakers fitting in the West?
Yeah, that's kind of the new role for coaches in the league, I think, with all the movement, is to be a recruiter, to be a magnet.
Right.
And Doc is, Steve Kerr is that kind of guy too, but Doc is, I don't know, doesn't everybody love him? I talked to somebody the other day that was not a fan of Doc Rivers, and I said, what's wrong with you? You've not been around the guy?
Well, that Warriors-Clippers series, the press conferences were like dueling, they were so
dueling
good.
Gold, yeah.
Well, I mean, they were so good in terms of answering questions with insight and originality and putting some effort into their answers, right? There was none of that stock, and none of that, like, they're too busy for this, right? I mean, they put thought into it. You got to think that's how they approach, to me, it reveals how they probably approach coaching and how they interact with people and their players.
It tells you a lot about somebody. I mean, Doc Rivers is always like that. I mean, I thought the best of him was when they were going through the Donald Sterling crisis, and the whole franchise was falling apart, and he really stepped up to, speak honestly and, really put some thought into it. Because, if you just do that, answer your responsibility to talk to the press and do it in a thoughtful manner, you're off the hook in a lot of ways, and you get an awful lot of respect.
Yeah, he's so genuine, Doc was, especially during that Sterling thing.
Yeah.
He was, actually broke down. He was in tears at one press that thing we had. So it was cool.
Well, I mean, it really kind of speaks to people skills, which to me is Kerr's greatest strength. And one of the reasons, an undervalued reason for the Warriors' success, to me, is Kerr.
The great thing about Kerr is that he pays attention to things that are happening like that day. And he says, well, let me just start out by saying, let's wish somebody well. Or I'm sure sorry to hear this person died. Or
When I die, I want it to be on a day game so Kerr can lead off.
So somebody will mention it.
Because he'll do a great tribute to me. Even if he doesn't like me, he'll do it. It would probably be better for this podcast if we would bring in somebody else who doesn't like Kerr. Let me tell you the other side about
We're
Steve
still looking
Kerr.
For that person,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah. Well, you were asking me, Ron, about the how things shape up this year for like the Clippers and Lakers, and even for those teams that have loaded up, I think there's still a mystery element how those guys are going to fit together. Obviously, they're going to be great, and they're going to be great players, and they're going to do well, but how well they're going to do, nobody knows. It's like when Kevin Durant came to the Warriors. There was a mystery, and there was an adjustment period that went on for about 3 years, actually. So we don't know. And that's one of the cool things, I think, about the Warriors is the mystery element this year. I think a lot of people who even were going to miss Kevin Durant as a player, watching him perform, is the people looking forward to, wow, this is a whole new deal, man. How's all this stuff going to shake out?
I think one of the interesting things about the L.A. aspect is that load management, you know, the new term.
Oh, don't even go there. Come on.
I know. That,
rest.
I remember an old college rest. Buddy said, I go to the bathroom in stages. That's load management, okay? this is the buzzword now, but it's a big deal. I mean, Kawhi Leonard sat out 22 games en route to the title.
Yeah.
Setting a weird kind of precedent. And is that the way he wants it to go in Clipperland now? I mean, you can't afford to sit out that many games. Paul George is coming off surgeries on both shoulders. He might want to take some time off. LeBron's 100 years old. Anthony Davis is always getting hurt. And, both of those teams are going to be dealing with resting key players a lot, I think. That could derail them.
Well, that kind of raises an interesting issue because I think you and I have talked about this, Jenks. The season's just too long.
Oh,
I mean, I would argue for a 60-game season
totally.
Anyway.
So
Kawhi probably, he got that by sitting out 22. But, yeah. I mean, given that that's not going to happen, because we know there's only one reason to keep it at 82 games, but that one reason is money.
Yeah.
So that reason is strong enough that it will never change. Mm-hmm. And we all know that, but it seems like that's the way the players and the teams are dealing with that is, okay, well, we're just going to rest and be sharp for the playoffs when it really matters.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's wrong to blame one party or the other. It's not just the owners or just the players. Both sides are too caught up in their own financial interests and agreed, if you want to say it, to cut back on this, give reasonable thought to cutting back.
Well, I did a story a couple years ago, just a little mini column on page 2 about this, and I talked to Draymond. I said, okay, you're in charge. You know, what do you do? And he acknowledged there's no other argument other than money. But again, that argument is so strong.
Yeah.
So his point then, this was before they readjusted the schedule a little bit, his point was cut the preseason down, which is what they did, right? And they stretched the regular season, I think, an extra week so there weren't as many back-to-backs. So they've made these sort of changes on the edges, right, about all they can do. And now it seems like teams like the Warriors who go to the finals every year, the season's 10 months long, right, or nine almost.
I'm not sure we're going to see this element as much with the Warriors. People are saying, well, Draymond and Steph will take a cue from Kawhi. And first of all, I can't imagine them wanting to sit out more than occasionally.
Right.
That's just not the way they're built. You know, they're basketball players and they're going to play. And plus, they might find themselves scrambling in the standings a little bit. So I don't think it'll be an issue here, but
around
the league, definitely.
But I think that's going to be kind of fascinating. Is one of the fascinating things about the Warriors will be how Kerr manages Steph and Draymond, because while Klay Thompson is out, that's your core is down to two.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's obviously Looney and D'Angelo Russell and other talented players, but let's face it, the core is now two until Thompson recovers.
Yeah.
So does that mean he plays them more minutes? He's always been very careful about 32, 33 minutes, not 37, 38.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Will he change that?
I don't think so. I think Kerr is one guy, always in the past, I'm thinking back to Pat Riley in those days with the old Lakers, and he would go into every season saying, you know, we can't bust our guys down. We have to. He was on board with load management before it had a term. And he would always say, we're going to do it. We're going to cut back on the minutes. We're not going to play this guy 40 minutes a game. And they go into the season, they get – he wouldn't do it. He just couldn't stick to it. You know, it was, every win meant too much.
Well,
and they abandoned that. But Kerr stays with it.
Well, but that's my point. Kerr stayed with it when they're 25-8.
Mm-hmm.
Will he stay with it when they're 10-12?
I don't
think he's gonna... they might not. I mean, they're not going to win as much this year.
No,
that's just a fact.
I don't see him playing Draymond or Steph 37 or 38 minutes. I just think that's going to be a rule. You know, that's just too much, and we'll see how we'll deal with it as it happens, and we'll see an awful lot of D'Angelo Russell and the rookies, and be some hard some hard lessons learned. But
just one quick thing, one reason I think that Kerr and the medical staff, whatever you want to call it, will stick to load management is because the way the season ended, and they don't want to be under criticism. Already you broke down two of your key guys in the finals. You're going to keep doing that. You're going to keep overplaying it. So they'll be aware.
Well, I mean, I think to me that I know what you're saying, but in many ways that raises the whole question, goes back to, is the season too long? Because like as Jenks said, I mean, if there's 82 games there and then four playoff series, it's going to be hard for a lot of players to take time off. I mean, if you put the games in front of them, they're going to play. It's what they do.
Yeah.
It's what they're paid to do. So it's going to be interesting if the injuries like that keep happening, and you got to think they were kind of freak injuries, but does Adam Silver acknowledge, okay, we need to do something to make to lighten the load?
So in other words, what you're saying is the Warriors did everybody a favor by furthering the discussion about – shortening the season by having their guys injured.
Well, but it wasn't just the Warriors. I mean, there's been injuries, you know. I mean, if you see another team go three, if Toronto goes to the playoffs, which they're not going to, I guess, not lost Kawhi. But, I mean, if another franchise goes to the finals 3 or 4 years in a row, my guess is they're going to have injuries too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a cumulative effect,
right.
I think, on a team that goes that deep, that long. They played an extra full season over those 5 years.
Yeah.
They played like 100 playoff games.
Unbelievable.
So you compare that to teams that didn't make the playoffs or got eliminated in the first round.
Yeah.
It's a dramatic difference in the burden on these guys' bodies.
And I think talking about the Warriors, that effect's going to carry over into this season because Steph and Draymond and everybody else is still suffering from that jet lag or whatever you want to call it, playing too much for 5 seasons.
Right.
I think it's going to have a big effect on the summertime stuff, playing in the World Cup or playing the Olympics. Yeah. You know, we saw Ben Simmons say he's not going to play for Australia as much as he wants to. Because he's from there, and they have a really good group of guys there. He's promising to play the Olympics, but it just doesn't, you know, the idea of Curry going off to China, you know, to play in whatever this tournament is, is horrifying.
Yeah, you almost want to shout out, don't do it.
Yeah, don't do that.
Well, but I think they've already cut back. I mean, Curry a few years ago didn't play in the Olympics, right, in 16,
because
he's got his China trip for Under Armour, right? He's got a sponsor obligation.
Mm-hmm.
He's got family obligations. And then I think they're very conscious of the extra burden on their body.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. And one thing I wanted to follow up on, Jenks talked about defense. And it does seem like the Warriors are going to be significantly worse defensively when you look at who they lost, as Jenks pointed out, from Iguodala to Thompson for the injury to Durant to Livingston. A lot of length, certainly on the perimeter. I mean, if you're starting Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell, no disrespect, those are not two great defensive players. And you're going against a conference where there's Damian Lillard, C.J. McCollum, you know, on and on.
Harden, Westbrook, Conley, and Donovan Mitchell.
I mean, Mike Conley now in Utah.
Yeah.
Lots of good guards. How do you think the Warriors reshape defensively? How does that work with Ron Adams? As you know, the defensive guru is going to have kind of a revised role, probably won't travel as much, focus more on the younger players. How do the Warriors maintain a good enough defense to win, do you think?
I'm not sure because, you know, I mean, defense, a lot of it is desire, and it's every night desire. Like, this is going to be a big part of what I do tonight is guard the heck out of somebody. And outside of Draymond, and maybe the kid Pascal has got a reputation, you know, and, you know, Looney works hard at it too, but you're looking mostly at guys who you have no idea. They've never done it. You know, like Willie Cauley-Stein's a great example. He's a big strapping guy, the number 6 overall pick, and they wound up booing him in Sacramento because he looked like he was taking plays off or taking rebounds off or taking rim protection off and just concentrating on his scoring, and they kind of ran him out of there. You know, and Alex Burks doesn't have that kind of reputation. Jordan Poole certainly doesn't. Glenn Robinson, you know, Spellman weighs 500 pounds or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of issues there. And you know, Ron Adams is going to be crucial in sort of reinforcing the desire aspect. But if it's not in someone's basic nature to play tough defense and it's something he's always done, you don't get Patrick Beverley out of nothing.
Yeah. And a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein, he seems to be of the mindset from what I've read and everything of wanting to kind of remake his image in that, at least in that respect.
Yeah,
people,
he's excited about
play
that.
Defense,
yeah.
And he's certainly come to the right place.
We got
to
give everybody the chance. It's just, you know, as we look at it now, who knows? Maybe they're all going to come out and try to be defensive demons and maybe pull it off a little bit.
Well,
I think it's going to be I can see Kerr coming up with a box and one defense, which is four guys playing a zone and Draymond going wherever the ball is, just chasing the ball all over the
court. Free safety.
Well, and you wonder if coming to the Warriors and being in this, you know, this level of expectation, this culture where Draymond, I mean, let's face it, if Willie Cauley-Stein literally takes plays off on defense, Draymond's jumping his shirt, right?
Yeah. No, hell yeah.
I mean, more than even Adams or Kerr can have an impact, Draymond can have an impact.
Yeah.
But in addition to the desire element, I mean, my legitimate question would be, are they good enough defensively?
Yeah.
I mean, Willie Cauley-Stein should be, you're right, at that length, with those arms, he should be challenging shots at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Steph should be preventing guys from going by him on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is he's had so much burden offensively.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's 31 now, almost to be 32.
Yeah.
So again, it goes back to how much are the Warriors gonna push him, his limits physically.
And you realize too that a huge reason they did all this winning was defense.
Absolutely.
And when the playoffs came around, they weren't whatever two or they were the best team defensively in the league. This is who you're going up against. Plus all this shooting. It was a huge thing.
Yeah, they relaxed sometimes during the regular season, but you're right. They cranked it up on defense in the playoffs.
Yeah, there's no question they're going to take a step back defensively, I don't think, which is one of the reasons they got D'Angelo Hall, because they know we're going to give up more points. We're going to have to score more. So you got to get some guys who can shoot.
D'Angelo Russell.
Last year they draft Jacob Evans, who apparently can't shoot at all. And that was a mistake for a shooting team.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that's unknown about the Warriors this year is where are guys going to develop? I mean, Looney, as Kerr's pointed out accurately, was kind of a washout his first couple years with the hip injuries, and then he's become a really good player.
Yeah.
So they need a Jacob Evans to improve. And I coincidentally just did a story yesterday talking to Evans, and you know who knows at this point, but he was known as a good defensive player coming out of Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
I think his shot is obviously a problem, clearly.
Did you work with him while you're talking to him on his jump shot? Because I know you can shoot it.
Anybody who saw me play knows I don't play much defense either.
As Ken Jenkins, by the way. These guys that wear resources they don't lean on when they need help with their shooting.
I was famous for playing no defense.
But my point is they're going to have, you know, for them to be successful, we're going to have to be sitting here next July saying, wow, Evans became really useful defensively. Cauley Stein, improved a lot on the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to have guys take jumps that we don't maybe see right now.
Yeah.
Or otherwise, they're in trouble.
And which is the fun of the season, because there's never not been a season in the last five or six where you've gone into the season saying, wow, I can't wait to see how these nine guys emerge or if they can play.
Right.
And they're not going to have the great role model that is Klay Thompson, who – when you think about it, this guy runs around on offense like a madman, just running circles and this and that and nonstop. Then he goes back and stops the other guy. I mean, just to be in that kind of shape.
Yeah.
But to have, and he's always that way. He's that way every minute he's ever played. That's a tough standard, but that is the standard that some of these guys should be looking at.
And to do it so quietly is a fantastic thing. Like even Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Apparently says stuff like, board man going to get paid.
Yeah.
Like Klay didn't say anything.
That was his soliloquy.
Well, Klay also did get paid, though.
Right.
He's smart enough to quietly go about it, but he did get paid. Any other parting thoughts on the way the league's been restructured? Maybe about the East. You know, we've talked a lot about the West. What do you think about the new look East with the 76ers, the Celtics? Have retooled with Kemba Walker. How do you sort of rank the top teams in the East, Bruce?
No, I think it's great. I thought the whole Philadelphia Jimmy Butler thing was crazy. I mean, this guy really wanted to win. He wanted to be around stars. He got there. He was around stars. And he took the big shots for Philly in the playoffs, and they have an incredible future. And he wants out? You know, screw you. Jesus, I mean.
Yeah.
But they still have Tobias Harris. They brought in... I'm trying to think some of the moves they made. Josh Richardson is there now.
Right.
Al Horford.
Well, Embiid.
And I don't think they're going to miss a beat.
Right.
And Embiid's going to ideally be in a little better shape. And Ben Simmons, if he's not going to play for Australia, maybe he'll work on 1,000 shots a day, you know, from mid-range. It doesn't have to be three-point. Boston, I think the mood around the team is going to be better without Kyrie because he was so disruptive. He certainly wasn't the only reason, but – you know, with Jalen, I think Jalen Brown and Jason Tatum, it's really all up to them because if they take the reins and lead that team, great coaching, that's a good roster. I don't think Toronto will fall completely out of it. And Milwaukee is really the team to watch. Yeah. Giannis is coming off the MVP. They lost Brogdon, which was inexcusable. They should have given him the money that he wanted. You know, he was a 50-40-90 guy. You don't see much of that. He didn't play the whole season, but, you know, Curry and Steve Nash, Larry Bird territory, good players. So, just to have three teams that can win it with other teams coming up, I think the East is looking pretty good.
Yeah, but it still seems like all the fun's going to be on the West.
Attention crazy. Yeah.
So what's your top three teams in the West? If I think we can probably agree the Warriors are a little lower. At this point. So what?
Clippers, Denver, and I don't know. I'll just throw in for the heck of it, Portland.
Yeah, I got Clippers, Denver, and Utah for me. I think the Lakers. We have to see how that roster works, but I think they're going to be kind of hit and miss, and you can't afford to do that.
Well, Denver's an interesting team when you think about how much they what steps they took last year, and right, and it kind of, I don't think it's surprising anybody that they tripped up, you know, I guess in the West semifinals against Portland.
Yeah.
But now that they've gone through that, you kind of wonder if they're going to take that next step. And Jokic, to me, is a is really, really good, and affects other players around him, right? Not just good scoring one-on-one, but good making other players better.
Yeah, if Michael Porter actually plays, this is a guy who was a legend in college, maybe the best player in college, 6'10", says he's healthy. I mean, what an addition that would be for them. So, yeah, definitely.
Well, Jake Scott, thank you very much for joining us on this pinch hit episode of Warriors Off Court. And we'll be back next week as the offseason moves along. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks very much to Bruce Jenkins and Scott Osler for joining me on this episode of Warriors Off Court. And thank you very much for joining us.
Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is the editor in chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @Con_Cron and email me at claterno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.